talking divorce. Said daddy was living by the fire, and he died by the torch. I'm where the AKs is. We like the Bay Bay kids. AM and daddy, I listen to suckers the same way that Ray Ray did. I'm telling Smithers and HKs, and I just was a grade A kid. Ain't no guy, and we grew up with hitters and did everything they said. Point out the block, we spinning that. Running the spot, we getting that. Give us some work, we flipping that. I'm hitting from Jet, ain't hitting back. I need a lawyer, money for commissary, and nobody ain't sending that. I'm in my cell, like when I get out, I'm making a movie, no Cinemax. Who? Yeah. Back home, and I'm fresh on bail. Phone chirping, it was next to tell.
Recording in progress.
Okay, good day, everybody. This is another panel discussion that is organized in collaboration between Alternatives in Montreal and Free City Radio, which is a weekly broadcast on CKUT 90.3 FM campus community radio in Montreal. Thank you so much to CKUT for live broadcasting this conversation today. The title of the event is Perspectives on Resistance and Resilience in Chile. This is a conversation that is going to highlight voices who have been involved in social movements in Chile. A lot of people have probably seen the images of the mass protests in Chile that really took a lot of momentum in the fall of 2019. But of course, these protests were not just starting at that time. There's generations of action and mobilization going back to the era of the dictatorship that creates the context for the movements in recent times. There was an intensification in the last few years of feminist mobilizations and movements in Chile. And that is one of the focuses for the event today, which is looking at the ways that feminist movements in Chile have been central to broader struggles for social justice, and looking at the strengths of the feminist movement also in responding to the crisis of the pandemic. Because in the context of the pandemic, there's been a very strong and important community mobilization, particularly around the fact that community kitchens have played an important role in providing sustenance to many communities who have been struggling to have their basic necessities met. So that's one of the points of context today. So there's a lot of questions to ask about social movements in Chile today, about the role of feminist struggles as part of these movements, as taking a leadership role within social movements in Chile. And I'm really happy to welcome the panelists that will be presenting today. We're gonna be hearing from Gisela Fireyes, who is from Place de la Dignité, which is an organization that mobilizes within Montreal. Within the diaspora to organize and to mobilize in support of the social movements on the ground in Chile. We also are going to be hearing from Javier Araya, who has been involved in social activism within Montreal, but also was involved in La Ola de la Chile, which is a network of community kitchens that should explain in detail for us. Javier helped arrange a communications portal for these community kitchens that took place. And then we'll also hear from Sibylla Sotomayor van Rijsselhem, who is from Las Tisas Collective. And Sibylla will speak about her intersectional work on art and activism, and also how it's linked to social movements. And so I think that we will first hear, you a bit of presentation and we'll have a bit of a back and forth in terms of hearing and understanding a bit of the context of how these efforts are interrelated. It's a real honor, and I think it's very exciting that we have these three voices with us today from, you know, interlinking social movements and feminist movements across the Americas. So thank you so much to everybody for being here, and also to people who are joining the webinar or are listening live on community radio. So we'll first hear these short presentations. Javiera, I'll invite you to start. And also just want to note that Javiera was also involved in helping to shape some of the language and thinking around this event. So shout out to that. And I'll turn it over to Javiera.
Thank you, Stefan. It's really a pleasure to be sharing this space with Sibylla and with Gisela. What I would like to talk about today is my experience that I had last year in 2020, a little bit by accident, because I end up spending a lot of time in Santiago without necessarily wanting to, but because of the pandemic, I got involved in Santiago, where I was and where I'm from originally, involved with an organization called La Olla de Chile. There is a website, it's called laolladechile.com. And what is that? It's a platform. It's really a website that is more about diffusion, it's more about information than the actual grassroots work, which is what I will explain right now. What is an olla común, which is what the kind of organization that this network, this platform puts together. Ollas comunes, or olla común, and olla in Spanish is a pot, but it's a, like a pot to cook, but it's a big one where you can put different things, different ingredients you can have. And this started, this has been part of Chilean history for a long time, especially during the dictatorship in the last the last years of the 70s and the first years of the 80s, where there was this big economic crisis in Chile. So people didn't have enough food to eat. And what did they do? They started cooking together. This wasn't a formal organization. This was really neighborhoods and different houses. And then you may have one house that had two tomatoes, another house that had potatoes, another house had beans, another house had bread. And yeah, two potatoes are not enough to have one meal for your family alone by themselves. But if you put them together with what your neighbors had, other families, then you can take advantage of the economy scale and get enough food for everybody, maybe not everybody, but a bigger number of families. So this is the organization. It's something that really starts from the ground. This is like people getting organized in their own neighborhoods to get something very basic as food. With the pandemic, the economic crisis with the pandemic, the fact that people weren't able to have to go to work to get enough income or to get enough food, because also it has to be said, the pandemic in Chile was very different, the kind of restrictions people had, especially in big cities such as Valparaíso, Santiago, Concepción, Antofagasta, where it was forbidden for people to go outside without a very specific authorization that was very limited. And if you go outside and if you are caught, you could end up spending the night in jail, for example. So then this made it impossible for many people who had informal jobs selling things on the street, for example, to get food for their families. So what happened is that these ollas comunes are starting appearing started functioning. We had a list of at least like 300 ollas comunes working in different cities in Chile. And we wanted to, in this network, we asked them how they were working. And this is a little bit what I will try to talk about, because the kind of connection that I think this shows with what is the title of the panel, this idea of resistance and resilience, is that this is really political organization from the ground. This is people getting organized between them in neighborhoods. This has to be close to each other. So sometimes they would ask help to the bakery in the same neighborhood. Sometimes they would ask like another neighbor who was selling some produce and to give it to donate it to them, to the olla común. And this was like the kind of organization that people did in order to not like the, for something very basic as eating. For us, what was also very important is that through the platform, people who wanted to donate money to Ollas Comunes, they could do it. So we raised like around $50,000, and but there were other platforms like this. The important is not the amount. What is important is that we ask the Ollas Comunes to what extent this money was important, to what extent the donations were what was making these Ollas Comunes work. And what they said, it was like, yeah, donations are important. They were, of course, important. They made possible for Ollas Comunes to function. But the key was the neighborhood. The key was what the members of the Ollas Comunes were giving. We asked them to what extent what the government is giving you, because sometimes municipal government also donated some things to the Ollas Comunes. Was this what was making people being able to eat? No, it was really the neighborhood. It was really the actual members of the Ollas Comunes who were getting organized. So to my point here, this is really about resistance from people who are actually in who have the need, who don't have any other option than getting to work with each other to survive and to get by every day. This is solidarity, this is mutual aid that made this Ollas Comunes work in a kind of survival politics that at the end was the way of resisting the neoliberal system that exists in Chile. I think I'll stop there.
Thank you so much, Javiera, for your presentation. And we'll continue on with the presentations. And as I mentioned before, we'll also have an opportunity to have some back and forth between the panelists on this conversation on resistance and resilience in Chile. Thank you again to CKUT for the live broadcast and to people who are joining us on Zoom, the webinar, and to Alternatives who's streaming it on social media. Sibylla is up next. Please introduce yourself and share a bit about your incredible work with Las Tizas, and I imagine many other projects in Chile. Thank you again for joining this conversation today.
Thank you for inviting me to this event, and thanks also to Javiera for what she was telling us that is very important and how all these restrictions are still in place. Actually, it's not in a past tense. It's still happening, the restrictions. There's been a curfew here in Chile for more than 1 year and a half. And the justification, the reasons are for our safety, but we know that it's not for our safety. And it's because it's a way of controlling the population. And of course, they need this control mostly since our spring of October 2019. So yes, and I would also like to say thank you to Gisela to be here today with us. I'm Sibylla, I'm from Colectivo Las Tesis, from Valparaíso. I am in Valparaíso right now, here in Chile. What we do with our collective is trying to find ways of resistance, actually, against all these different forms of oppression, but from an intersectional point of view that combines all these social issues, but from a feminist perspective. And this feminist perspective is a point of view that combines the struggle of women, but also from people from the LGBTQAI plus community. This is very important for us as a collective. So every time that we make open calls, for example, for political artistic action, for performances, is always this open call to women and people from the LGBTQAI plus community. We think that we share a lot of the violence from the neoliberal system, but also from patriarchy that is everywhere. It's not only in Chile, of course, it's also in Canada and all around the globe. It is a structural system that is oppressing us, and that's our fight. And we think that this feminist point of view is actually related, like really like in the core of the social issues, of the social demands. Everything that we were listening in the streets in October of 2019, we think is a feminist struggle too. We don't think it's something that you can separate, really, because we think that sometimes some people try to separate, like to say, that kind of problem, like the feminist struggles or the feminist issues are from like a second category or a third one or a fourth one or a fifth one, etc. And we don't think it's like that. We think that everything is related, and that actually in feminism, from this also queer point of view, is the answer to our problems, our social, political, economical, cultural problems. And we also think that a way to resist to this is through art. And this is very important in this discussion, probably, because it's doing activism, but from an artistic also point of view. So it's a feminist point of view, but it's also an artistic point of view. It's taking the languages and materialities from art and weaponize them, translating into weapons against all these systems that oppress us. And we think this is very important when you're also a woman and a queer people, queer person, that you are fighting from your body. You are demanding rights for your body, from your body. You are denouncing violence that goes through all your body and your life from your body too. Like really taking that vulnerability, but weaponizing it. Like we think that it ends up being a weapon of resistance and a way of fighting all this. And we think there's a big power of metaphor, la metáfora, of this metaphorical way of approaching these struggles. The fact that it's more difficult from the political point of view, from the institutional political point of view, to take this, you know, like to appropriate what we do and then just empty all the meaning and just take like the form, and then they take our weapons, you know. We think that in this metaphorical point of view, it's more difficult, like to be appropriate from this political, this institutional political point of view. And we think that, I don't know if I'm being clear, I'm very sorry, I hope this is clear. If it's not clear, then I can, okay, thank you. So what we always argue and where we stand is in the political, that is not the same as this institutionalized political sphere. In Spanish, the difference is between la política and lo político. There's a difference there. And lo político is in the base, is where the people are struggling. Like Javiera just told us, like, for example, through Ollas Comunes, or for example, through performance, or through any other ways of fighting that we think all of them are very valid, even if there are different, you know, it's different ways of resist all this type of violence. And just to finish, to round up a little bit, I also think personally that in the feminist struggles, there's an historical, like prerogative, you could say, to fight from your body, to fight from performance in this feminist and LGBTQI plus fight. There's always this thing about how we take our body as a territory of oppressions, and we transform it into this weapon, this way to say what we want to say and to fight against what we want to fight. And so in that way, we think that we are like inscribed in a tradition of feminist movements, of feminist fights from performance, from the body. And this is a very particular way to face the political, to also activate the political from the body. And we think it's also different from a masculine hegemonica point of view. We think it's different also. It's another way to approach the political. And it is also historical. It's not something new, actually. And we really believe in that transformative power of performance, this idea that performance through body, we can really generate an impact. We can really disrupt these political spheres and these fields of power. That's a little bit like the thesis of all this. Yes. And then I could just go deeper in this and other subjects, of course. Thank you.
Sibylla, thank you so much for that. We look forward to hearing more from you in a bit. And so now we'll hear from the third panelist, Chisela, from Place de la Dignité, which is building links between social movements in Chile and in Montreal.
Hello, my name is Gisela Frias, and I was born in Valparaíso, Chile, and I've been living in Canada for a really long time now. I think it's important to sort of situate how Place de la Dignité as a collective emerged. Back in October 2019, as the social uprising was taking place in Chile, many of us were part of the diaspora, Chilean diaspora all over the world, relived a sense of trauma, but also a sense of hope. So the trauma was coming from the place of seeing the repression with which the uprising was met. And it sort of brought us back to, you know, those of us that experienced the coup d'etat in 1973, either our parents or us as children, or the impact of the dictatorship and the neoliberal regime that it established and perpetuated even after the dictatorship. So that trauma came back alive for many of us. I'm happy to say that for also many of us, it didn't stop us. If anything, it put us in motion. It made us also want to be part of the movement of the uprising itself in Chile. We sort of identify ourselves as part of a territory, maybe not a physical, you know, natural territory within Chile, but definitely one that is linked to what is happening in Chile socially and politically. So the collective is made up of a group of Chileans who, you know, under those circumstances came together and started to figure out what our role in terms of linking to this uprising was. So one of the first objectives that we set for ourselves was at that moment, and sadly we have not been able to stop doing this, is to denounce the human rights violations taking place in Chile. So we began, like a lot of our work at the beginning was pointing out to the oppression, to the violence with which demonstrators were met in Chile. And in bringing race and awareness internationally about that. Secondly, as Canadian residents and citizens, it was important for us to also work in making sure that the Canadian government recognized the human rights violations and denounced that. So we've done some work in that area. One that hasn't been quite successful and that we account to the fact there's a certain complicity with the, in terms of the Canadian government and its support of neoliberal regimes, not only in Chile, but throughout Latin America. So there's definitely an ideological a link there, right? And more than ideological, maybe I'll speak to that a little bit later in terms of the economic benefits, right, that it means for Canada to not question the economic and political system that actually set up the uprising. And then thirdly, as sort of this territory abroad, we, in this link, you know, to part of the social movement, we wanted to also be a place of support for social mobilization in Chile. And very quickly, it was very clear to us that resistance and resilience in Chile has the face of a woman. So as soon as the pandemic happened, we were quite worried to see, to hear from Chile that hunger was definitely an issue. And we started to see, as Javiera, you know, pointed out, the open sort of organizing of all these olla común, open collective kitchens. So we set up a campaign. Most of the work that we do sets in raising awareness, so making sure that for sure the idea was not to necessarily just send money to the poor, right, in Chile, but instead work in solidarity and in support in whichever way we could the work that women were doing all throughout Chile. We set out to even identify, figure out, like, who is doing these, like, ollas comunes. And my gosh, we ended up contacting with like 13 different organizations, whether they call themselves collectives or assemblies, or even, you know, not necessarily all of them working under an umbrella of identifying themselves as feminists, but for sure, women of all different backgrounds. We're talking about, you know, young women. I'm thinking of the group in Arica that calls themselves the Quiltras de Arica. A quiltro is a street dog, right? And that's the name that they have chosen for themselves. Young high school women that were organizing, not just for the purpose of supporting an olla común in their neighborhood, but aware in working on issues of gender violence, and not just to raise awareness, but to actually be there to accompany other women in denouncing and, you know, feminicide in Chile, but also being there for them. In Chile, there's this word that's called, it says apañar, and, you know, it really means to accompany, but it's also like to put your shoulder, like, on to someone, to support them emotionally, financially. Something that we learned from the organizing of the ollas comunes is that, as I said, it was like high school women learning about, you know, gender violence, about abortion, learning about their rights, teaching even the younger generation about these issues in such a clarity in terms of where this was all coming from, being able to talk about the patriarchy, being able to talk about capitalism, being able to identify what they were living, not as a simple poverty, but as a result of a system, right? And definitely with a banner that said, you know, neoliberalism was born in Chile and it will die in Chile. And for those of us at SARA Chile, seeing that, that was like a huge sign of hope, right? So yes, we lived trauma, but we also lived hope as we connected with all these different collectives. There's so much more that I say. I think the only other thing I'm going to point out is something else that I think is a very important work that women and feminist groups are doing in Chile right now is working and demanding justice for all the young, especially young men that have been imprisoned throughout the pandemic, right? So we have an important number of political prisoners in Chile right now. And it's their mothers, their sisters, their wives, the ones that are calling for action. They're calling for justice. And they're the ones also that are having to pick up in all sort of areas, you know, of their lives, their families. Something that we've done in terms of denouncing, Canada's sort of complicit attitude in terms of human rights violations in Chile is we've supported a campaign of signatures. We collected more than 1,500 signatures through a petition. We worked in collaboration with other collectives throughout Canada to demand that our government makes a clear statement. Sadly, the statement that came back was quite weak, not much of an acknowledgement of the human rights violations, nor of how Chile profits from the neoliberal system of that has made everything in Chile an industry for trade, for export, or, you know, like foreign investment. It's very common knowledge, right, that we've got Canadian mining companies in Chile. We're talking about over 40 companies with more than 100 mining projects. And women are in the forefront of the struggles for, you know, what we might want to call the environment or simply life in Chile as well, right? And we can't deny that links us. I'm also a teacher, so for me, it's just so important to raise awareness among our youth, among Canadians, about the links that there are between the North and the South, right? And the links that how they have been made through the neoliberal agenda, so that if change is going to happen, it's going to have to happen not only through the work that, you know, our sisters are doing in Chile, but also through our work. So working in solidarity. And I think I'm going to leave it there.
Thank you so much, Gisela, and of course to Sibylla and Javiera for your presentations. There's something that I saw that, at least in my ears, it linked something that is common to all your presentations, which was, it seems that the social movements in Chile, going back to the 1970s, have really existed in a global context, so that the territory is not just restricted to the nation, in quotation, like the national territory, but because of displacement and because of diaspora, like the dreams, the visions are very, of social movements, of feminist movements in Chile are very localized and very tangible and specific, but also have this sort of inspiring global nature. And I think about, you know, like that film, Nostalgia de la Luz, and sort of like the sort of transcendental nature of some of the ways that social movements in Chile have had to overcome such great systemic violence and carry forward despite that. And I was really excited that this panel was taking place when Chile is not like in the headlines, in quotations, but is sort of in a in-between period, just in the fact that the struggle continues outside of the headlines per se, right? And it's that sort of daily work. But I was wondering if you could share any thoughts about the idea of like the territory of struggle, not necessarily being linked to just a national territory, but sort of a more global vision and sort of a diaspora that is international now because of Chile's history. The fact that, you know, there's two panelists from Montreal, one from Valparaiso in Chile, that sort of internationalist aspect of the work.
I'm I can give a little bit of my perspective. I mean, I think something, and I like to point out that is, of course, my perspective is one from someone who is on the outside, right? So it has to be understood also as such. But something that I saw with the work that we did with the Ollas Comunes all throughout Chile was something that we learned from the different, you know, feminist groups and women's groups, was their own understanding and their own definition of territory. And I'm a geographer, so I was like really quite like taken by even the use of the concept of territory and of, you know, of the body, as Sinila was pointing out, as sort of in how it's the body is living sort of neoliberalism. In different context, right? And wherever it is that you are. And in that sense, I think that that people have taken the right to redefine what territory means. And I mean, also very much, you know, linked to the uprising, you cannot like forget to, you know, point out that Chile as a nation, you know, it is changing. In the uprising, you could see a lot of, you know, flags that were not the Chilean flag, right? We're talking about the indigenous flag. So a recognition that we are an indigenous people. And that then brings in all these other issues in terms of, you know, indigenous, you know, say Mapuche territory, the South, and how even, you know, women are organizing in that context. I may be also pointing out that neoliberalism in the region has also meant that there is an increased migration into Chile, you know, from, you know, marginalized communities from Peru, from Colombia, from Haiti, definitely shaking the social fabric of Chileans. And redefining territory, like one of the Ollas Comunes that we worked with was an actual informal settlement in, trying to remember if that was in Antofagasta or, you know, somewhere up north at this moment, I'm sort of forgetting. And most of the women organizing there for the right to housing were a mix of immigrant, you know, women, and Chilean women, sort of in solidarity with one another, you know, fighting together for their rights.
I would like to add something that I don't know if it's really related to your question, but maybe it is. That is regarding diaspora and the story of our country, and that for me at least it was very moving, like everything that for example, Gisela was telling us too, but also Javiera, all these movements from Chilean people that weren't in Chile and how they also lived this uprising, how this resonated with people that was like far away, but was still connected. It's like, as you said, Stefan, like the territory is people too. Like, like Chile between like gigantics, you know, like okay, we're going to call it Chile, okay, for now, is more than this territory, is our body territory, like our bodies and our stories that are also a part of this territory. And so it's very, for me at least, very moving when this connection is still there. Like how we relate to everything that was happening in that moment, how we relate right now with everything that is happening right now in Chile and all the politics, you know, that are very repressive regarding the pandemic, but also how Gisela also told it, like all the trauma and this intergenerational trauma that was moved in October. And that, of course, for people that has lived diaspora and exile, it was very, very difficult. I was born in exile. My father was in jail for 3 years. He was tortured. And then he went to exile in Belgium. So I was born and raised in Belgium. And I arrived in Chile when I was 10 years old. So for me, it was very, I was very scared, for example, even if I was in Chile now in October, I was in Valparaíso, but the second that everything started, it was like this feeling that you are happy because finally this revolution is happening, this very needed revolution, you know, like we need this change, but also this intergenerational trauma, like activated, like something that I wasn't scared before. I was never scared for the police, for example. Now I was scared because I remembered like all the stories and everything that happened to my mom and to my dad, etc. So I think that's something that happened to a lot of people here in Chile, but also to everyone that was outside, and also to many people that was in other countries before, because of exile, and that never came back to Chile because they made their life in other countries, and also the story with exile is very complicated. It's not very, very easy. So I think that there was I really felt that maybe I'm going to a metaphysical place, but I really felt like a connection that was bigger than only what was happening here in Chile in that moment. I really felt it through my friends that were in other countries, etc. Like something was happening, something was moving us in our story, and in our story of diaspora, of exile, but also in our story of violence against bodies. Yesterday here in Chile was the day of the people that is detained and then disappeared. I don't know how you say that in English. Las personas detenidas desaparecidas. So this idea of appearing from your body in with a story of bodies that have been disappeared, you know, is very powerful in from a political point of view, but also from a symbolic point of view. And I think there's also that's where this idea of territory also is.
I don't think there is something like specific to Chile in this idea of resistance. I think that we can see that in different places happening around the world. I know that Chilean history is more well known for some reasons, but I think that the important part, and we can like, I think we can see moments and actions of resistance even here. Sometimes we forget, like if someone is watching this from Chile, maybe they're gonna say, oh, they are Canada, and Canada everything is all right. No, in poorest neighborhoods in Montreal, you can see people also organizing some kind of thing that looks like an oil commune, because that's the only way of to have enough food to eat. So to me, what's important is not that much the national whatever border we would like to give it, but rather this idea of connecting to each other, of linking people, of getting to establish relationships, like the what Sibylla was saying also about this feminist, or Gisela too, feminist way of caring for each other. Like ollas comunes are a first way of caring of your neighbor, even though maybe your neighbor is not that nice to you. You don't want your neighbor to die, so you're gonna do something so you get to survive. And that's bodies, that's the first act of resistance in a place where you're told that the only way that you should deserve to be alive is that by working 60 hours at some awful company that's going to use all your labor. The first act of resistance is saying, I'm not gonna die, I'm gonna survive, I'm gonna have enough to eat, I'm gonna exist. My body is gonna be still there, and maybe eventually in a protest like one that we saw in November in Chile, like where 3 million people were on the street in a country of 15 million people. So it's more about this idea of connection, and it's also connection that connects histories. Like we have after the whole uprising, there is a new constituent assembly right now in Chile functioning and like creating, drafting a new text for the constitution, and the president of that assembly is now an indigenous woman, and the first thing that she said, the first like speech she gave was, we're gonna have this assembly, and she mentioned the murder indigenous children in Canada. So that's connection. That's two people who live like in very different opposite parts of the earth, of planet Earth, who who went through the same kind of oppression, awful thing. So this is like genocide in Mapuche, in genocide indigenous people in Canada. So it's really this idea of connecting that I see it very, and I would like to hear Gisela and Sibylla about that, like very feminist way of connecting things, like things, experiences that are common to different people in the world and that are about surviving, like the minimum, this idea of dignity too, like, and maybe Gisela can tell us about the why the collective is called Place de la Dignité, like this idea of we want dignity, we want something that is still not, it's something that is minimum. It's not about like, oh, we women, we want better salaries. This is none. We want like dignity. We want to have like at least a little bit of healthcare. We want to have pensions. We want to have like a little bit of something that just enough to be dignity, not even rights, not even equality. Like the demands in Chile are really for dignity.
Yeah, would anybody else like to carry forward the conversation on that point?
I wanted to add something. I just wanted to add something regarding this relationship between Canada and Chile, that also another of our struggles are regarding extractivism, like this idea that these colonial ways have not ended, really. There is not an after. It's still happening. And for example, there's one example that's very important that is regarding the crisis of water here. Water is private in our country, which is terrible. And there's a lot of communities living without water. And there's actually organizations from Canada that are supporting not the crisis, but supporting the extractivism. So this idea of how the North haven't stopped these colonial ways of being in the South is very worrying. And sometimes there's not enough information regarding it. So I remember when I saw it, like, and I started reading about it, all these studies, etc., saying that there's like these big corporations, or even there's an organization that is from the government of Canada. I was like, like, why are you doing that? But yes, I think there's a lot of in all this process that we are living in Chile, but also more far away, like globally, there's a lot of things that we need to unlearn, a lot of ways that we need as a bigger, you know, like society, you could say, unlearn to do. For example, this colonial extractivist ways, we need to unlearn it. These patriarchal oppressions also, we need to unlearn it, you know. This capitalism and neoliberal also oppressions, same, etc. Yes, I just wanted to add that.
I think I'll just, you know, I guess say the same thing you guys, what I'm hearing from you guys is that I think that there's like a global obvious recognition of systems of oppression. That, you know, that there are there today and are relevant. I mean, colonialism is here. It's not, you know, something in the past. It's just be studied in history, and it has an impact on our everyday lives, right? And identifying capitalism and for those of us that have taken the time to even understand like the whole sort of, you know, free trade, like neoliberal agenda that is here, and it is becoming more and more intense, right? Like in terms of like the different trade agreements that are being, you know, signed, you know, globally. That is in the patriarchy, of course, is something that we all share, right? So I think that our resistance is to that, and it's lived on a daily basis, right? It impacts us as women and the way we feel and we experience, right? Our bodies, our health, our education. So yeah, I mean, I think as we're talking about, and Javiera said it, like this is happening in Chile, is really it's an illustration of something that is happening in different at a different scale in different parts of the world, and maybe some are in a bit of more denial than others, but I'm just kind of reminded, like in the back here, I have these posters of, as I teach also at a college, we organized right before the pandemic, a series of talks. I called it Uprisings from the South. And we had talks from India, from Lebanon, you know, from Chile, from Colombia. And we could identify like the roots of oppression in all these different in all these different places. But I think it's also really, really good and important that that these stories of resistance are shared.
Thank you so much for all of you sharing your thoughts on that point. We only have about 10 minutes left, but one thing that came to my mind for people who might be listening and hearing the analysis that you're all sharing and also your intersectional perspectives is all three of you have been tangibly involved in very specific projects that might, for a lot of people, seem just incredible. So I'm wondering if you could just describe, like in a very tangible way, how did you do what you're doing? Like Javiera, how did you put together the website for Community Kitchens? Sibylla, can you just describe maybe a little bit about how Mestizas works? Gisela, could you talk a little bit about how do you organize around Fasta de Dignité? It might, you know, as activists, maybe sometimes these things seem like second nature, but for people who are listening, who might be really inspired by the ideas you're sharing, it'd be cool to hear a little bit about how tangibly and just in sort of like, basic sense, how did you organize your projects?
Very, very like simple. In this case, I think that the key is that it's something done collectively. Like I'm sure like maybe Corina is there watching, a friend from Santiago, Rodolfo are there watching, who are also some of the colleagues that I work with. I think that the key is like when you do things in a group, in a collective, you end up doing something that necessarily has this politics behind, that is about like doing something in a way that puts first this idea of there is a collective. Very concretely, what we did was this website, and then we contacted more people and we recruited kind of more people with whom we didn't necessarily share exactly the same political views, like all the details. No, we asked them like, would you agree to participate in this project? We're doing this. This is the objective. And many people say, yeah, I would like to help making calls. I would like to help organizing WhatsApp groups. I would like to help writing things. I would like to help drawing. There was this big drawing contest about with drawings that represent what Ollas Comunes do. So that was another option, very practical and very kind of concrete work that someone needs to do. And it's not necessarily the same that we see in all these other movements that are about like visibility and advertisement. This is really about work that is done on the ground and that is not always very pretty, that is not always very sexy, but you end up like writing emails or writing or making calls. And in this case, it was about like contacting Ollas Comunes, talking to people, sometimes for a long time, sometimes for a short time, and writing things. And yeah, most of the time very boring, but necessary. Like Ollas Comunes, because they cook, and sometimes chopping onions is not the most sophisticated thing, but it's important.
From Colectivo Las Tesis, I don't want this to sound like I'm happy to be I don't know how you say it in English, precarizar el arte. If someone can help me.
Like making precarious the art?
Yes, making art or an artist precarious. I don't want this to sound a little bit like this, but that's a little bit like the reality. Being an artist in Chile is very difficult. generally you you work in many other things, you know, you have like different works and jobs that you also enjoy sometimes and sometimes you don't. So our collective began that way. We are four women from Valparaíso. We are friends too. That's very important, I think, the fact that we are friends. I, in particular, know all of them from different places and kind of like put them together. And with some of them, we've been friends for more than, I don't know, like 15 years, with other from almost 20 years, and others maybe less. And it's like that. It's been a very like diverse story between us. But what we have in common is that we are all artists, but from different disciplines. We are an interdisciplinary collective. So some of us, like me and Daphne, we come from a theater background, but our colleagues come from design, designer slash history teacher. That's Paula Cometa, and Lea, that is a fashion designer, but with a focus on the relationship between clothing, but also our story, like a Valparaíso story, like this very like historical point of view also. And we start working in the year 2018, at the beginning of the year, with this idea that we need it. We have like this urgence to spread feminist ideas, but to spread it through art, because we think that through art we have the chance to get more people like to pay attention, and not only like to say, hey, go read this text, you know. So that's what we try to do with our work. And we work in different ways, like small plays, street performances, more long plays, sometimes collaborative plays, video performance too. Of course, we use a lot of the media, like everything that we have in hand. And what's very important of our work is that we really believe in do it yourself. Like, it doesn't matter if you don't have a background, for example, in music. I don't have a background in music, but I still do the music of the collective, and whatever, you know, it doesn't have to be perfect. What's important is to do it and to resist from what we believe, you know, and for these fights. So that's pretty much what we do, even if all the rest of the time we are working in other stuff, like in a university of making clothes or in schools, etc. So it's pretty much what we do. We really believe in, if you want to do it, you just have to do it.
Gisela, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this point. We literally only have 4 minutes left in the broadcast, just a time check. I'm sorry, but we're stuck on the radio time. Thank you so much.
I'll make it short. I'll say that the first thing I thought when you asked was meetings, lots of meetings, lots of Zoom meetings lately. Even though that is actually true, I think when Sibylla said, you know, being friends, I think when we came together, we didn't really know each other very well. Maybe we had seen each other like in different sort of activities, but it's not that we were a group of, you know, at this moment we're 10, the number fluctuates. We've got people that also collaborate with us. And it's not like we were like best of friends, you know, coming together to do this. But we did very quickly realize that having having the time to get to know each other and to get to know who we are and appreciate one another made the work easier. We are a bit more tolerant with one another. You know, we all have our things, and of course that they come up sometimes in like a 2-hour meetings. And technically we spend some time in sort of talking about what were our values as a, you know, as a collective, and thought that was really, really important, and not just do, and divide some of the work. Every so often we have small committees that might be in charge of moving something forward. And getting a lot of support from people who collaborate with us, who are willing to do one thing. And we just need to ask them to just do that one thing, but they don't have the time to be in meetings, right? But yeah, I would say, you know, friendship, tolerance, a bit of internal organizing, values are sort of at the core.
Wow, well, thank you so much. much, Gisela Javiera and Sibylla, for joining this conversation on resistance and resilience in Chile. I found it, again, really great to have an opportunity to share this space in a time when Chile is not necessarily in the headlines. And I really just want to thank you all for being part of the CKUT broadcast today, hosted in collaboration with Alternatives and also the Comité pour les droits humains en Amérique latine and La Place de la Dignité. I'm Stefan Christophe, who hosts Free City Radio. This recording will be available through Alternatives and on CKUT.ca, that's the community radio station in Montreal. Thank you again to the panelists and to everybody who took the time to tune in and who is part of organizing this event. Thank you to Jack at CKUT for getting the broadcast on air, to Miriam Feruz, Catherine, Marcella, and Jimmy at Alternatives also. And thanks again to the panelists for your time, your inspiring work, and your reflections today. And I'm sure the conversation will continue. Courage and take care.
Thank you.
Muchas gracias. Thanks. Gracias. Un gusto conocer. 지금까지 선거인 정보 카드를 못 받았거나 카드의 선거인 정보가 틀렸을 경우 웹사이트 elections.ca를 방문하십시오. 우리의 표를 행사합시다. 투표와 현재 시행 중인 보건 안전 조치에 대한 공식 정보는 elections.ca를 방문하거나 1800-463-6868로 전화하세요. Sarah's excited to celebrate her birthday at a restaurant. She's thought about it all week. She invited her friends. She got a new dress. She went to the restaurant. She wasn't allowed in the restaurant. She had to put away her new dress. She couldn't see her friends. And she thought about it all week.
Don't wait until it hits you. Get vaccinated. A vaccination passport is now required to enter certain public spaces. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
Ça prend une bonne dose de courage et de persévérance pour traverser une pandémie.
Ça prend aussi une bonne dose de patience, de résilience, de confiance, d'optimisme, d'humour et d'amour. Une bonne dose de détermination, d'endurance, d'empathie, de motivation, d'ingéniosité, et d'espoir.
Mais surtout, ça prend une deuxième dose de vaccin.
Un message du gouvernement du Québec.